rich, dressed in black and clearly dead. What is it doing in this vision, which I'm sure represents the return of Megan's body to the earth? What does it mean? I asked aloud. And where is the spellbook in all this? I received an answer to my question. The parade of witches on the firelit nighttime beach vanished. In its place was a sunlit place where waves lapped on a tranquil beach. The same gazebo was there, too, with dozens of black and white balloons fluttering from the gingerbread trim. The balloons were all in fanciful shapes, like whales and starfish and even an octopus. A white-spotted pied crow flew into the picture, trailing a blue leash. I recognized the ancient paper-covered book clutched in Poe's talons. I understood. The scene of Shannon and Dakota's wedding and the location of Megan's funeral were one and the same. It was also the place where River needed to return Bridget Bishop's long-lost spellbook. What about Christopher Rich? Does he have to die there? More questions formed in my mind, but it was too late. The beach blinked away, and I was once again alone in my kitchen, staring at a blank screen. Orion chose that moment to stroll into the room via the cat door. I was glad to see him. He was glad to see his red bowl, and ignored me in favor of kibble. Orion, I said, is that black cat a witch in disguise? You can tell me. He favored me with his blankest of blank innocent cat looks and went straight back to eating. Didn't matter. I knew the answer anyway. I pulled up my topic list. Methods of dispersing crows was number one. I was pretty sure I had the answer to that one. Give the spellbook back to Bridget Bishop and they'll leave. On to number two. Wedding planning. That one gave me an opportunity to call Shannon and get an answer to the gazebo question. Is the one on the Dumas's beach the one in my vision? It must be. I scrolled my directory and tapped her name. Hi, Shannon. Got a minute?
Oh, hi, Lee. I was just about to call you. Good news from Blushing Bride.
Oh, what is it?
Our dresses are ready early. We can pick them up Monday. Isn't that great?
Her voice fairly rang with happiness.
Can you make it? We can meet at Dunk's, same as last time, 9 o'clock?
I'll be there, I said. By the way, I met the best man, Sean Madigan. We had breakfast together yesterday.
No kidding. I'm glad you got a chance to meet him. He seems nice, doesn't he? Did I tell you he's not staying here at my dad's place after all?
No. Why? What happened?
Poor guy wasn't getting any sleep. The guest room is right next to the aviary, you know, and I guess Poe talked all night.
She gave a little giggle.
Anyway, Sean has a lady friend who has a spare room, so he's staying with her. Worked out for the best. My dad was a little nervous about having him here. We have some nice paintings and stuff, and Sean, well, you know.
I understand, I assured her. Glad it worked out for everyone. Would you do me a favor, Shannon? Could you email me a picture of the gazebo? Your pergola. I'm working on an idea for a segment about wedding planning, and Mr. Doan likes a presentation with photos.
Glad to. I'll run outside and snap one and send it right away. I'll bet Mr. Doan was thrilled about your show so far. That part about the crows stripping the tree was so creepy, and you looked gorgeous.
Thanks. Having a professional makeup guy makes a big difference.
Nope. It's not about the makeup. You're a good reporter. I hope I can do that someday, too.
She gave a happy little sigh.
I'm so glad I took your class. Anyway, I'll see you Monday morning.
I'll be there. Don't forget to take that picture for me.
Right away. She promised. Bye.
So, I said to Orion, Sean has a lady friend with a spare room, huh? What do you think of that? He pretended he wasn't listening, but the forward-pointing ears gave him away, so I kept talking. I wonder if Pete knows about it.
I'll bet he does.
There's a lot about this case he's not telling me.
Orion stopped eating and turned to face me.
Bah!
He said and shook his head.
I know. I said case, didn't I? Pete would laugh and call me Nancy Drew.
Are you laughing at me, too?
I'm sure he was, even though I've never heard him laugh out loud. I stopped talking to the cat when Shannon's picture of the gazebo came through. Several pictures. She'd shot it from every side. The one showing the beach in the background looked exactly as it had in my visions, except, thankfully, there was no dead man in it.
Chapter 35. I chose the shot of the gazebo with the beach and the ocean in the background, and made two full-page prints on photo paper. I put one aside to use for the suggested venues part of my proposed report on wedding planning, because I'd told Shannon I would. A promise made is a debt unpaid. The other was for me. I studied it with a magnifying glass from every angle. I hadn't realized until I'd examined the enlargement that there was a bird perched on one of the inside seats. Too dark to be a seabird. It was probably a crow.
Why wouldn't it be?
I wanted to share the picture with the few people I'd told about the visions. Maybe it would look familiar to one of them and help to connect the dots for me. I didn't expect to see Pete until late evening, and River would still be asleep. I was sure my ever-curious Aunt Ibby would be interested.
"Come on downstairs with me, Cat," I said. "Let's go visit our aunt. You can tell her all about your garden adventure with the witch cat, and I'll show her the picture."
Down the two flights we went again. I'm sure most of the miles on my Fitbit come from stair climbing. I took my usual seat at the kitchen counter, and Orion curled up in one of the captain's chairs.
"It's awfully pretty," she said when I showed her Shannon's picture. "I don't recognize it at all. Sorry. Is that a crow inside there?"
"Afraid so. I can't seem to get away from them. I had Shannon send this over because I wanted to be sure whether or not the gazebo behind her house is the one in my visions."
"And is it?"
"Yes, no doubt."
"The visions are tied up with Shannon and Dakota's wedding, then," she said.
"Yes." She folded her arms and did that wise old owl thing again.
"And you still believe Bridget Bishop is connected to our little black cat friend, as well as to the murder of crows?"
"Yes," I repeated. I gave the collar back to the black cat, and I swear I could hear her talking to me. "I think Orion knows she's Bridget, too." I paused, carefully phrasing my next observation. "I also believe that there's a major relationship between Claudine Bagenstose and Sean Madigan." Her arms unfolded quickly, and one eyebrow shot up.
"Relationship? As in man-woman relationship? I can't believe that. Not Claudine."
"I don't know what kind of connection there is, but I learned today why his car is in her garage.
He's living there."
She brought both hands up to her mouth, and her eyes widened.
"Good heavens! Not Claudine! What will people think? Oh, dear, I know what they'll think. They'll think she's just like Gloria Tasker, for goodness sake."
Big sigh.
"Is there no propriety in Salem at all anymore?"
"Shannon says Sean moved out of their house in Marblehead because Poe kept him awake all night with his talking," I said. "The guest room is right next to the aviary."
"It could be true, but how did he know Claudine Bagenstose in the first place?
Any ideas about that?"
"Both Claudine and Elliot were great collectors. I told you about it. Do you think it's possible that they were customers of Mr. Madigan?"
"Collectors of stolen art?" I said. "I'm afraid it's a possibility. If they bought a painting from him, they believed it was stolen, even if it was a fake."
She nodded. "Well, at least that would mean Claudine's not a you-know-what, like Gloria."
My aunt's priorities are sometimes peculiar.
It might mean she's an accessory to art theft, I reminded her.
That could be worse than being a you-know-what.
She reluctantly agreed.
Have you talked to Pete about all this?
I'll talk to him tonight and show him the picture of the gazebo.
I still hadn't told my aunt about the spellbook, and I wasn't sure I'd ever tell her, or anybody. I didn't want to cause a long-dead hanged Salem witch any more annoyance than I already had. I just wanted Bridget to get her book and take it with her to wherever she was spending eternity. It was a good time to change the subject.
Shannon says that we can pick up our dresses for the wedding on Monday.
That was fast. I can hardly wait to see what you've picked out.
Black isn't my favorite color, as you know, I said. But I do like my dress, even though I probably won't ever wear it again. I can't imagine being like that ancestor of Claudine's who wore black for the rest of her life after her husband died. Not me.
I've seen some of the great-grandmother's wardrobe. Claudine did a vintage fashion show for the Friends of the Library years ago. All black. Even her corsets and chemises and fabulous hats were black. And all of it was obviously expensive. Lots of Paris labels. She has the woman's rings, earrings, bracelets, hat pins, and necklaces, too, all with real jewels.
By the looks of the Bagginstow's place, there's still plenty of money in the family. I thought about the mansion. Plenty of spare rooms, too, in case a friend needed a place to stay. Even room in the garage for an extra car.
Seems like you've got a lot to think about, Aunt Ibby said. Is there anything I can help with, research-wise? I'll be at the library most of the day. Just call me if you think of something I can look up.
I will. And thanks for listening to me and not thinking I'm crazy.
You are not crazy. You are very special, and you can talk to me about anything.
Pete says that, too. I'm blessed to have both of you in my life.
Come on, big cat. Let's go home.
Orion dutifully followed, and together we climbed those stairs again. Back in my own kitchen, I tried to focus on things practical. I marked 9 a.m. Dunkin' Donuts on my calendar for Monday, and began a shopping list for the weekend. So far, all we'd planned was a trip to Fenway on Saturday for the Sox game. I'd need to plan a few meals for Saturday and Sunday. I wondered if Shannon had called Therese about taking pictures of our final fitting. I put aside the shopping list and hit Therese's number.
Hi, Lee. Your show was awesome. Congratulations,
was her greeting. I had to laugh. It's not my show by any means, I said. But thank you.
You'll have your own news show someday. I'm sure of it.
Since Therese is a novice witch and had been personally trained by Megan, her prophetic words carried some weight. I thanked her again and asked if she knew about the Monday morning fitting plans.
I'll be there, she promised. It's going to be a busy week. We have some coven things happening. Plans for Megan's funeral, you know. We have to figure out which covens will be involved in the gathering. Everyone wants to be represented. We all loved her.
There was a little catch in Teresa's voice.
I talked to Pete about that phone call, you know. He told me not to worry about it, that the police will take care of it. So I told River it was nothing to be concerned about. She seemed relieved.
He's probably right, I said. He almost always is. Will the funeral be soon?
The night of the summer solstice, she said. Midsummer midnight. A perfect time for her to move on to the Summerland.
I remembered what Dakota had said about getting married on the longest day of the year. That's the 21st, I said. The same day as the wedding.
I know, she said. Same place, too. We tried to choose a garden or a seaside for a peaceful transition, and Mr. Dumas said we could hold it on his private beach. It'll be beautiful.
So, my vision had been correct. The black-robed witches forming a circle on the beach suddenly made perfect sense.
"I'm afraid I don't know anything about Wiccan funerals," I said, "but I loved Megan, too. Can I help in any way?"
"You can send white flowers if you like, but only family and Wiccan friends and fellow coven members take part in the ceremony."
"I understand," I said. And I did, but I still felt oddly left out. After all, Megan was communicating regularly with me, not Therese.
"I'll see you Monday morning, then," I said, and we wished one another a good day. The visions had shown me the funeral and the wedding taking place on the same beach. It hadn't occurred to me that they were both on the same date. Midsummer. The summer solstice. Why not? A perfect time for weddings and funerals. Beginnings and endings. I still wanted to talk to River. I had so much to tell her and to ask her. I decided to risk waking her, and called even though it was just a few minutes before noon. I was surprised when my friend answered on the first ring, sounding bright and alert at this early, for her, hour.
"Hi, Lee," she said. "I watched your show through the window last night. Did you see me and Rhonda waving at you like a couple of goofs?"
I laughed. Couldn't see because of the lights. If I had, I probably would have laughed out loud in the wrong place.
"Got a minute to talk? I have some news for you." "I have something to tell you, too," she said. "I'm wide awake and starving. Want to go someplace for lunch?"
"We could grab a sandwich at the Hawthorne Tavern on the Green," I suggested. "It's a short walk for both of us."
"I'll be there. 15 minutes.
"That soon? You really are hungry." I checked the clock. "Sure, I'll see you there."
"I can hardly wait to see you."
Her voice actually sparkled.
Chapter 36. The Tavern on the Green is a cozy little pub in the historic hotel. I was first to arrive and watched River as she practically bounced through the door. My friend looked far different than she had just a few days earlier when we'd driven to Gloucester to get away from the crows. Her long black hair was in a single braid, her pretty oval face free of makeup. With her pink mini-dress and white sandals, she looked more like a high school kid on spring break than the glamorous star of a late-night TV show.
"Lee, I'm so glad you could meet me."
She joined me at a corner table.
"Seems like we have lots to talk about."
"You go first," I said. "You sounded so excited on the phone."
"I did? Well, maybe I am. You'll never guess who asked me out."
I controlled a grin. Just about anybody who'd watched the interaction between River and Buck Covington on her show would know the answer to that. But I played along.
"I give up. Who?"
"Buck Covington, that's who. The handsome hunk who interviewed you about the crows. We're going out to dinner tomorrow night. What do you think about that?"
"I think that's great. If it makes you happy, it makes me happy, too."
We ordered lunch. Me a straight-up burger with Vermont cheddar, River a grilled portobello mushroom with brie.
"You said you had some news for me," she said. "Good news, I hope?"
"I think it is," I told her, lowering my voice. "If this gazing thing of mine is working right, I believe I contacted Megan. I asked her to show me how to return the book." She leaned forward, eyes locked on mine.
"I knew she would help me. I just knew it. What do I have to do?"
I looked around the room. No one was in hearing distance, but I whispered anyway.
"Therese told me about Megan's funeral at the Dumas place in Marblehead. It's going to happen there. I saw it." "That makes a lot of sense," she said. "I figured it would take a whole coven to do it anyway, and there'll be even more than one coven at Megan's return to the earth."
"More than one? I saw only 13 people in a circle."
"That would be right. Your visions are getting more specific, aren't they?"
She whispered, too.
This will be a gathering of witches from several covens, but Megan's own coven will distribute her ashes. Since Megan is gone, they picked me to balance the power as the 13th member.
That's why I saw you carrying an urn, I reasoned aloud. I didn't actually see Bridget Bishop there, but I saw a crow carrying the book.
She'll be riding in an animal or a bird of some kind, I expect, River said. But wouldn't it be cool if we actually saw her in person? Wow.
I guess I won't be able to be there, will I?
Not without a sudden conversion to Wicca,
she smiled.
But don't worry. I'll give you a full report.
I told River about the conversation I believed I'd had with the black cat. Does that make any sense to you? I asked. Could she actually get into my head that way? She shrugged.
Bridget was powerful in the 1600s. I'm sure she still is. Maybe even more so. I just hope when she gets her book back, she'll be able to move on.
She might even stop scaring restaurant customers with apparitions and apple smells.
I hope so, I said, resuming my normal voice. But the ghost tour guides will miss her.
I sure won't,
she said, tossing her long braid over her shoulder.
And I'll bet Gloria's and Elliot's families won't miss her tree-stripping crows.
She frowned.
I wonder why she did that. Do you have any ideas about it?
I don't, I admitted. But I'm pretty sure Bridget is calling attention to those two particular witch deaths for a reason.
If you're right, she might not cross over until the reason is figured out. Is Pete working on it?
I think so, but you know Pete. He doesn't like to talk about police business. He hasn't even told me what he's found out about the threatening phone call you got. She frowned.
I was scared when Therese told me what the rest of the message was. I was afraid for Christopher Rich. But Pete said not to worry, so I'm trying hard not to. I understand about him not talking about police business. You don't like to talk about the gazing business.
True. But speaking of crows, I began.
You told Buck that you thought they'd be back, and it looks like you're right,
she said.
There were a bunch of them on Brown Street this morning.
They're on Oliver Street, too, I was whispering again. But in one of the visions, Megan waved her hand and made them disappear, then come back, then disappear again. I think when Bridget gets her book, she'll send the crows away for good.
Lunch is finished. We paid our tabs and left. I wished my friend a great dinner date with Buck Covington, and she hoped Pete and I would have a relaxing weekend. We parted at the main gate to the common and walked in opposite directions. I turned my phone off before lunch, and when I turned it back on, a new voicemail popped up. It was from Gloria Tasker's cousin, Jane.
Lee, she said, you told me to call you if I thought of anything you might like to know about. Well, something happened. Maybe it's nothing, but...
Her voice trailed off.
Anyway, this guy came to the door yesterday. Said he noticed I was moving and wanted to know if I had any old paintings for sale. I'd already packed all of Gloria's pictures that I thought were pretty into the U-Haul, but there were a few in the garage I was going to send to Goodwill, you know? This guy kind of turned his nose up at them, same as me. He wanted to know if there were any more, and I told him they were already packed in the truck, so he left. But something happened last night you might want to know about. Oops, I have to hang up now. Zeus needs to go out. You can call me back if you want to.
She left a number. I walked a little faster, anxious to get home and return Jane's call. I already had an idea of who the painting-seeking man was. Still very much aware of the presence of the crows in the trees bordering the common as I hurried past, I was relieved to see that they numbered far fewer than they had in the earlier invasion. At least, they do so far. Once at the house, I got my notebook and pencil ready, sat at the table, and called Jane. "Hello, Jane," I said. "It's Lee Barrett. What's going on?"
"Thanks for calling, Lee. Like I said, maybe it's nothing, but it was strange. Kind of scary. I'm going to be glad to get out of Salem, what with the crows and the tree thing and all.
What happens? Are you okay?
Oh, sure. No problem, she said. I told you about that guy, the one who wanted to buy old pictures.
Yes. Did you get his name?
No, he didn't say, and I didn't ask. Didn't think it was important.
What did he look like? Young? Old?
Oh, around 40-ish. Brown hair, brown eyes, average height. Nothing special about him. But listen, here's what I wanted to tell you about. Something happened last night. It was real late, after midnight. Zeus got to barking up a storm, scratching at the front door, going nuts. I peeked out the window and didn't see anything, but I let the dog out anyway.
What happened?
Zeus made a beeline for the truck, barking his head off. I heard somebody cussing, like loud, whispering cuss words, know what I mean? Then running sounds, and a car took off burning rubber all the way to the corner.
I could hear the fright in her voice. You think somebody was trying to break into the truck? The same man?
That's what I think. He didn't get into it, though. Zeus saw to that. Good dog. Anyway, we're heading out this afternoon. I just wanted to tell you about it.
Did you report it to the police? I asked.
I thought about it, but what was I going to say? I mean, nothing was stolen. All I could have told them was that my dog barked at somebody and they took off. I didn't see who it was, and who wouldn't run away from Zeus.
I'm glad you called me, Jane. My boyfriend is a police detective. Would you talk to him?
I was sure Pete would think, as I did, that Sean Madigan was involved somehow in the midnight visit. Uh-uh. I don't have time to get involved with police reports and all that. Her voice was firm. I want to get on my way home. I've had enough of this place. Good riddance.
Can't say I blame you. It hasn't been a pleasant trip for you, what with your cousin dying and all the work involved with sorting and packing. Can I call you later at this number if I have any questions?
Oh, sure. It's my cell. And listen, I saw you on TV. You looked so pretty, and it was real nice to meet you.
Thanks, I said. Nice to meet you and Zeus, too. Have a safe trip home. After I hung up, I sat still for a minute, staring at the notebook. I hadn't made many notes, just that a man had offered to buy old paintings, that he'd learned that there were some in the U-Haul, and that the dog had chased someone away from the truck late that same night. Not much information, but I plan to tell Pete about it anyway.
Chapter 37
I spent almost an hour at Shaw's Market and wound up with all six of my canvas shopping bags full. I felt prepared for any mealtime possibility, from picnic on the beach to candlelight buffet to breakfast in bed. So whatever Pete and I decided to do with our weekend, we wouldn't go hungry. I unloaded the bags onto the kitchen counter, with Orion investigating every can, box, and frozen carton. I expected Pete to arrive early, around 6. I didn't have to plan anything for dinner, because we'd already decided to make an early night of it. A ride down to the Salem Willows to watch the sunset. We'd grab a chop suey sandwich and play a few of the vintage pinball games in the old arcade. A good old summer fun date. I'd just put a half-gallon tub of vanilla ice cream in the freezer. There'd be hot fudge sundaes sometime this weekend. When Orion took off for the backstairs door, a sure signal that Pete was about to arrive. I started for the living room door to greet him. Just as his key turned in the lock, my phone buzzed. Jane's name popped up for the second time that day. "Hi, Jane," I said. "Can you hold for a sec?" Pete was all smiles, with one of those big supermarket bouquets of brightly colored flowers in one hand and a giant Hershey bar in the other.
"Happy long weekend, babe,"
he said, and leaned in for a kiss. Really bad timing for a phone call from an almost stranger. Dumping the phone onto the coffee table, I accepted the flowers, the candy, and the kiss. My polite upbringing prevailed. "Sorry," I whispered, pointing at the phone. "It's Gloria Tasker's cousin. Gotta take it."
"It's okay,"
he said, taking the flowers back.
I'll put these in water.
I won't be long, I said, meaning it with all my heart. I held the phone to my ear. Hello, Jane. Are you and Zeus on your way home?
Yep. We're already on the Mass Turnpike. I'm sorry to bother you. I wasn't sure whether to call you or not. Sounds like you're busy, but I thought this might be important.
Her tone was urgent. I sat down on the couch. What's wrong, Jane?
Well, after I talked to you before, I decided to give Zeus a quick rinse with the hose. You saw how he likes to roll on the ground, and this is a rental truck. I didn't want the seats messed up. They might charge more, you know?
Uh-huh. Go on. Would the woman get to the point so I could get on with my romantic weekend?
He had something sticky in the hair around his chin. It looked like blood, and I was worried, thinking maybe he bit whoever was messing around with the truck last night.
Has he bitten anyone before? Pete had come back into the room and gave me the head-tilted, eyebrow-lifted, what's-up signal. I gave him the palm-up, I don't know, hand signal in return and put the phone on speaker mode.
No, Zeus has never bitten anybody. He's a sweet boy. But I figured, what the hell? Somebody was messing with his stuff. He thinks he's protecting me, so they got what they deserved. Right?
She didn't wait for an answer.
Then, after we got on the road, I noticed there were little red spots on the passenger seat where he rides. I pulled over and took a look. And Lee, he has 2 puncture wounds on his left shoulder.
Oh, the poor thing. What did you do?
I have a first aid kit, so I cleaned them, used an antibiotic. I'm going to bandage him up so he won't lick. They're tiny little holes, but they're still bleeding a little. I think whoever was trying to get into the truck stuck him with something. I hope he did bite the bastard.
He seems to feel okay. His nose is wet and his tail is wagging, but I'll have his vet look at it as soon as we get home. I just thought you should know about it.
I don't like hearing that, Jane, I said. Let me know how he's doing, won't you?
I could tell by Pete's expression that he didn't like hearing it either. He gestured toward the phone and whispered,
Let me talk to her.
That surprised me. Jane, I think I told you that my boyfriend is a detective. He's here right now. Can you talk to him?
All right, she said, if you think it's important.
Pete took the phone.
Hello, Jane. This is Pete Mondello. I'm sorry about Zeus. You said these are tiny wounds? How tiny? Does it look like he was stabbed with some kind of knife?
No, not a knife.
Jane's voice was hesitant, thoughtful.
These are little round holes, very small holes. A knife would make a slanted cut, wouldn't it?
Usually, yes,
Pete said.
How far apart are the punctures?
Maybe 4 or 5 inches.
I see. Do you think it's possible that whatever the weapon was, it could have made both holes at once? Like if it was a long, pointed object, something like a knitting needle?
Something like a knitting needle, Jane exclaimed. Yes, that's kind of what it looks like. A really skinny one that went in sideways, and the point came out a few inches from where he got stuck. But what kind of nut job goes around stabbing innocent dogs with knitting needles?
It occurred to me that a charging Doberman doesn't look all that innocent. But I didn't say so. Pete asked Jane if she could photograph the wound with her phone and send it to me, and she agreed.
Thanks, Jane. I may be calling you back later, if that's okay.
He said,
Here's Lee.
He handed me my phone. Jane, I said, I'm glad you called. Please stay in touch and let us know how Zeus is doing. Drive carefully.
I will. I'll take that picture as soon as we stop for the night, but I don't know how good it will be. 2 little dots on a big black dog. Anyway, bye, you two.
What's all that about knitting needles? I asked Pete. You aren't telling me something.
You know I don't tell you a lot of things. Can't. But what's all that about somebody messing around with her truck? I didn't want to question her about it until I knew what happened there. Were you planning to tell me about that?
Sure was. I've had 3 calls from Jane this afternoon, just about back to back. You weren't here for the first 2. I repeated as well as I could what Jane had told me about the man who'd wanted to look at Gloria's pictures,
and the previous night's excitement in front of Gloria's house. She didn't call the police because, as she said, her dog barked at somebody, they got in a car and drove away in a hurry, and nothing was stolen. He nodded.
Yes, she's right. We probably wouldn't have given it much priority. But the three occurrences put together, the man looking for paintings, the attempt to break into the truck, and the attack on the dog, make it add up to something quite different.
You're thinking it adds up to Sean Madigan, right? I said.
Not necessarily.
He spoke slowly, deliberately.
But it may add up to a murder.
That statement didn't make the least bit of sense to me. I was sure he wasn't referring to a murder of crows. So what did he mean? What murder? Who was dead? I waited for him to continue to explain what he meant. Nothing. He picked up the Hershey bar I'd left on the table.
Better put this in the refrigerator. Maybe we'll make s'mores sometime this weekend. Did you get marshmallows?
He headed back toward the kitchen. Whoa! Just a darn minute. I chased him down the hall. You can't say, it may add up to murder, then change the subject to candy bars. What are you talking about? What murder? He turned to face me, a half-smile on his face.
You found something today that maybe we've missed. I'm rethinking one of the witch's deaths.
Which one do you think was murdered?
Elliot Bagenstos, he said. The man who fell out of his own apple tree.
Chapter 38. Our date at the Salem Willows that fine June evening was a strange one. We did all the usual things we and generations of dating couples have done. Rode the flying horses, watched the little kids ram bumper boats into each other, took goofy pictures in the photo booth, played pinball and other vintage arcade games. Remember Zoltar, the animated fortune teller? He's still there. I took a good hard look up into the famous willow trees, checking for crows. Saw a few, but nothing extraordinary. In between playing games, watching the sunset, and taking big bites of those famous chop suey sandwiches, and arguably the best popcorn in the world, we talked about a possible murder.
Remember when I told you that the medical examiner found some of Bagenstos's injuries weren't entirely consistent with falling out of a tree?
Pete finally brought the subject back up. I remembered. Are you allowed to tell me what injuries you mean?
Perforated eardrum.
Can't a hard fall cause that? I asked.
It absolutely can. That's why, even though the bleeding from Elliot Bagenstos's ear seemed like more than a blow to the head usually causes, it was completely plausible that a fall from that height could rupture his eardrum, could kill a man of his age. Besides, he had a heart condition. The ME ruled accidental death and released the body. I'm going to take another look at the doc's notes and x-rays.
So, if he didn't die from falling out of a tree, what do you think he did die from?
I think he could have died from a narrow, sharp instrument being pushed through his ear and into his brain.
I almost choked on my popcorn. Like a knitting needle?
Something like that. There are still a lot of questions. I'm going to do a little more checking and run it by the chief.
Who would do such a thing? He was a bank president, pillar of the church, and all that.
I don't know if anybody did. I want to check a few things out, that's all. I probably shouldn't have said anything about it. But what happened to Jane's dog, that got me thinking in a new direction.
Me too, I said, as another idea burst into my brain. A new direction.
Wait a minute.
Pete stopped working the flippers on the Captain Fantastic pinball machine, and the ball rolled right past the hole.
What are you thinking? No playing girl detective on this, okay?
I'm not a detective, I insisted. But I am an investigative reporter. At least I'm trying to be. I promise I won't do anything to get me in trouble. Really? And what you just said about knitting needles, completely off my radar.
Don't even go there,
he said in his cop voice.
I'm serious.
I'm not thinking about that, I said honestly. I'm thinking about what's locked up in Jane's U-Haul that somebody wants so badly.
Interesting,
he said, moving to the Superman machine.
You might suggest that she have an appraiser take a look at the contents as soon as she gets home.
You mean Gloria's paintings?
Not necessarily. Could be anything. Or nothing. Trying to get into the truck could have been a random thing. Kids out of school for the summer raising hell. Going around trying car doors, looking for something to steal. Happens all the time.
Kids don't carry knitting needles.
Don't go there,
he warned again. I promised that I wouldn't, and I meant it. But I would keep in touch with Jane. I wanted to know what was in that truck, and I didn't think it had anything to do with a bunch of bored teenagers trying doors. We didn't talk much more about police or reporter business. By then, I guess neither one of us wanted to go there. That didn't mean either of us had stopped thinking about the U-Haul, the apple tree, the injured dog, or even the possible murder of a witch. At least I hadn't. And the silence on the drive home told me that Pete hadn't either. We were on Derby Street, about to turn onto Hawthorne Boulevard, when he said,
It's early. Want to take a ride over to North Salem? Maybe stop at Treadwell's for ice cream?
A quick vision of a big scoop of coffee Oreo ice cream with chocolate sauce and crumbled waffle cone bits on top immediately replaced all negative thoughts. Good idea, I said. And we were on our way.
Mind if we drive by the Tasker's place?
Pete said. He'd already turned onto Foster Street, taking a shortcut through the neighborhood. Are we looking for anything special? I asked. I didn't bring my notebook. Drat.
I always have mine.
He patted his shirt pocket.
Good habit for a reporter. You never know what might turn up.
We approached Gloria's darkened house. There were other houses on three sides of hers, left, right, and behind, all with lights beaming from the windows. Boom! Another idea. Maybe the nosy neighbor fits in somewhere. What else does she have pictures of? Pete, I said. What about the nosy neighbor? The woman who took the video of the crows destroying Gloria's quince tree. Can you find out which house is hers?
I'd guess from the angle of the video you showed it would be that one.
He pointed to the house to the right of Gloria's. When I saw the U-Haul, it was parked pretty close to that property line. What if the woman heard Zeus barking? What if she grabbed her camera and took pictures? I was excited. Jane says she was always snooping on the neighbors, but hardly ever talked to any of them. Pete parked across the street from the empty house and turned off his lights. He pulled the notebook from his pocket and flipped the pages open.
What's her name?
Bertha something, I think, I admitted. She didn't want me to credit her at all. I guess she thinks people might say she's nosy. I had to laugh. That sounded so silly. Aunt Ibby knows her, though. She's the one who got the video for me. Notebook snapped shut and headlights back on.
Do you think she's still up?
The nosy lady.
No, your aunt.
I looked at the clock on the dash. Only 9 o'clock. I'm sure she is. Shall I call and see what kind of ice cream she wants?
Ice cream?
You promised. I put on a fake pout. He turned the car toward the famed ice cream parlor on the Salem Peabody line and my coffee Oreo sundae. I called my aunt, took her order for hot butterscotch on maple walnut. I knew Pete would have his usual hot fudge on vanilla. Questions about over-the-fence photos, knitting needles, and, yes, even murder, could wait a few more minutes. With our three treats safely on board, we headed home. You think I could be right about the woman taking pictures last night? He reached across the console and patted my knee.
I think you've been right about a couple of things, babe, he said. You were only supposed to be investigating crows, and you've managed to turn up some good information that we'd have missed.
I hadn't thought of it that way. If I hadn't gone to see Jane about Gloria's tree, I wouldn't have known about the man who was looking for paintings. I wouldn't have met Zeus and learned about the peculiar wound in his shoulder that reminded Pete of Elliot Bagenstos's punctured eardrum. If I hadn't snooped behind the Bagenstos's garage, I wouldn't have seen Madigan's Toyota inside. Although I had a sneaky feeling Pete had already known about that. Aunt Ibby was genuinely happy to see us. Pete handed her the ice cream and put the photo booth pictures on the table. He got right to the point, asking for the name and telephone number of her Snoopy friend. My aunt obliged, scribbling the information on an index card and handing it to Pete. She doesn't often share this kind of thing, you know. The only reason she sent it to me was because I'd told her about Marilee's interest in the crows.
I understand that her neighbors say she photographs them all the time. Without permission.
He shook his head.
I don't understand why nobody's reported her to us before this.
Jane told me that she doesn't share her pictures with anybody, doesn't put them online or anything. I said, it's some kind of strange voyeurism, I suppose.
Do you think those photos of the crow tree are important somehow, Pete?
My aunt asked.
Not the crows, Miss Russell.
He tucked the index card into his pocket.
I think she may have photographed an attempted break-in last night.
That would be important, wouldn't it? But I think she would have called you if she had. She once explained to us at book club that taking candid photos is her hobby. That if she took a picture of anything important, like a Bigfoot or an alien spaceship or the like, she'd report it immediately.
It's worth a shot anyway.
Pete dug into his hot fudge sundae and shared a drop of vanilla ice cream with Orion.
Speaking of shots, the early news had a report that Christopher Rich actually has a gun that uses the same kind of bullets as the ones he claims were shot at him, my aunt said. Some people are saying he might have shot at the wall himself.
We didn't watch the early news, I said, surprised. Did you know about that, Pete?
Oh, sure,
he said. Lots of shop owners have guns for protection.
His is legal. We're taking a look at it.
If it was on the news, he could have mentioned it to me. He knows I'm interested.
How come you didn't tell me about it? I asked, trying not to sound as annoyed as I really was.
He looked surprised.
I'm sorry, babe. I meant to. We got to talking about other stuff and I forgot. Didn't think it was important. He brought the gun to us this morning. We're checking it out. He says he's never even fired the thing. It looks brand new. Chief doesn't think there's anything there. I don't either.
River thinks he fired those shots himself. For the publicity.
Don't think so.
Pete insisted.
Not from that gun, anyway.
What about the shells I found? I asked. Can you tell what gun those came from?
Not yet. But if I hear anything new about it, anything it's okay for me to talk about, I'll tell you. But I'll bet you a pizza they didn't come from the bullets in Rich's wall.
You're on, I said. I'll bet they did. Why else would the Bridget/Crow show them to me? I licked the last tiny crumb of Oreo from my spoon and sighed a contented sigh. That was good. Going to the Willows tonight was good, too. Sometimes the simplest things like pinball games and ice cream are the best.
You've got that right,
Pete said.
Like wearing jeans and a t-shirt instead of a tuxedo and a stiff white shirt.
You're talking about Shannon and Dakota's wedding, I suppose, Aunt Ibby said. I haven't decided what to wear to it myself. The invitation says black or white.
I thought about Monday's gown fitting. If I didn't have to wear black, I'd choose white for sure. Or maybe a black and white print to match Poe's feathers. I looked at Pete. I'm glad you decided on the tux, though.
Yeah, my sister Marie said I should, especially since you'll be all dressed up, walking down the aisle with Madigan.
Ugh, don't remind me. I hope I don't have to dance with him.
If you have to, don't worry. I'll cut in,
Pete promised.
Be sure to get some pictures taken together. Nice ones.
Aunt Ibby tapped the photo booth pictures, me with my eyes crossed, and Pete with his tongue out. Not like these.
I like casual pictures, Pete said, as long as I know they're being taken.
He patted his shirt pocket.
Thanks for the address, Ms. Russell. Your friend might be really helpful.
I think she'll be happy to help.
She paused.
Maybe not. She likes being anonymous.
According to her neighbors, she's not as anonymous as she thinks she is, I said. But what I think is amazing is that they seem to accept her anyway.
They must believe she's harmless, Pete said. Just another colorful local character. Look at the way we accept our Salem witches. That's a big change from the 1600s.
You're right, Aunt Ibby said. Those 17th century people could never have imagined there'd be a statue of Samantha Stevens in downtown Salem.
Or that Mr. Dumas would invite a couple of covens to hold a Wiccan funeral on his private beachfront, I said, still surprised about it. But it'll be Midsummer Midnight, and I can't imagine a more perfect place for Megan's funeral.
A good location, Pete agreed. Since it's private property, chances are Victor Protector and his friends won't be gate-crashing.
That's good, my aunt said. My phone buzzed.
Look, Pete, it's a picture from Jane. Poor Zeus's shoulder. I handed him the phone.
Can't see much on that little screen, can you?
Nope.
He peered at the display.
It just looks like a patch of black dog hair. Want to forward it to my phone? I'll blow it up later.
I did as he asked. We disposed of our ice cream cartons, said goodnight to my aunt, and with Orion in the lead, we climbed the front stairway to my apartment. Chapter 39. On Saturday morning, we joined a good-sized group of people for a brief annual ceremony at Proctor's Ledge, commemorating the June 10th anniversary of Bridget Bishop's hanging. Therese was there with the WICH-TV mobile crew. I noticed that Christopher Rich was about to address the crowd. We left a bouquet of daisies and red roses and left quietly before his speech began. There were no crows in attendance. After that, the weekend passed pretty much as we'd planned it, except I'd bought way too many groceries. Ballpark hot dogs and beer at the Sox game, and Sunday dinner downstairs at Aunt Ibby's dining room table meant I'd only had to prepare a couple of lunches. Pete made us breakfast in bed twice, and we made a good dent in that half gallon of ice cream. Monday rolled around much too soon. Pete had to be at work at 8, and I'd promised to meet the girls at Dunkin' Donuts at 9, so it was one of those rushing around, fire drill, quick cup of coffee and a blueberry Pop-Tart for breakfast kind of mornings. Pete left first, so I was alone when I passed by the garden on my way to the garage. There were a couple of crows perched on the back fence, but Theodore Scarecrow seemed to be doing his job well. I saw no evidence at all of scavenging crows among the herbs or vegetables. The trees on Oliver Street still had quite a few black-feathered visitors among their branches, but not as many as I'd seen in recent days. Local radio and TV reported that, although the number of crows in the city was still far above the normal population, they'd scattered over a wider area. There were even some reports that a significant number of them had been observed roosting in Gloucester's Dogtown area. So there, Peg Wesson and Tammy Younger. If the crows kept leaving at this rate, chances were there'd be no big pyrotechnical display for me to cover, and if they'd already stopped chowing down on gardens and trees, any follow-up Murder of Crows investigative report was unlikely. It was time to put Plan B into motion. If only I actually had a Plan B. This time I was first to arrive at DD. I ordered a large coffee and settled into a booth with notebook and pen, ready for inspiration to strike. I'd thought about doing a segment on an inside look at wedding planning, but a topic without fireworks and legendary witches seemed suddenly much too tame.
I alternated between staring out the window and doodling on the open notebook page. Shannon, Hilda, Maureen, and Therese all arrived at once and tumbled, laughing, through the door like a clip from a Three Stooges movie. I scooted over to make room for them while they ordered coffee and joined me one at a time. Shannon bought a half dozen assorted donuts and plunked the box down on the middle of the table while Therese took pictures.
"Okay," Shannon said. "The dresses are a week early. That's worth celebrating with donuts. I was worried they wouldn't be in time. We sure didn't give them much notice."
"Good omen," Maureen said. "Everything is going to be perfect. Even the weather predictions for next week are good. Fair and unseasonably warm."
Shannon clapped her hands together like a little kid.
"My perfect wedding! I'm marrying the man of my dreams! My daddy's going to give me away! I have the coolest ring-bearer in the world! My dress is gorgeous! The cake is going to be fabulous! I even hired a magician who pulls rabbits out of his hat and makes balloon animals for the guests! How awesome is all that?"
"The fabulous Fabio. That explains the black and white balloon sea creatures in my vision." "Totally awesome," Hilda declared, raising her chocolate donut in a toast. "To Shannon and Dakota, may they live happily ever after." We tapped our donuts together, creating a little flurry of powdered sugar, finished our coffees, and headed for the blushing bride and our final fittings. We decided to put on a mini fashion show for Therese's camera, so our consultant, Karina, added jewelry, bouquets of silk flowers, and even a veil for Shannon, all to approximate the way we'd look at the wedding, just a little more than a week away. Alone in a dressing room, I posed in front of a three-way mirror. Even though the dress was black, my least favorite color in the world, I liked my reflection. That is, I liked it right up until the moment Bridget Bishop joined me in the left side of the glass, and Megan appeared on the right. Megan smiled. Bridget didn't. I turned and faced the Bridget image and mouthed, "What do you want from me?" It was easy to read her lips, especially when I heard her voice in my head at the same time. "I want my book." I turned to the image of Megan on my right. "How?" I whispered aloud. Again, Megan held the crystal ball. In a swirl of mist, I saw River walk to the center of a huge pentagram drawn in the sand. Holding the book in both hands, she stretched her arms over her head. A crow flew into the scene, an extremely large one. Even bigger than Poe, I thought. The crow gripped the book in its talons, then disappeared into the mist. At the same instant, the Bridget image disappeared from the mirror. The Megan image remained, a look of sadness replacing her smile. In the crystal ball, a line of black-robed witches began to form. I counted them. 14. That's wrong. There should only be 13. There was a tap at the dressing room door. Megan disappeared. There was no one reflected in the mirror except a perplexed me.
"You okay, Lee? We're ready for the pictures," Shannon called. "Let's go."
I pasted on a grin, opened the door, stepped out, and joined the others. We smiled and posed and preened for the camera. Corina fussed over us, adjusting a shoulder strap here, a fabric fold there, making sure everything was perfect. Still, I couldn't erase the image from my mind. Something is wrong. There should only be 13. What did it mean? With my black gown safely enveloped in a pink garment bag and draped across the passenger seat of the vet, I drove home. I was anxious to talk to River, to tell her that Megan had revealed quite an explicit picture of how the book return was supposed to happen. I also wanted to ask her about the significance of that extra witch in the picture. I checked my watch for the umpteenth time. Still too early to call a person whose TV workday begins at midnight. Been there, done that. The idea that I finally knew how the book was to be passed on to the original owner brought me a great sense of relief.
I hadn't realized how worried I'd been about it until Megan had shown me that crystal ball. For a long time, I've alternately feared, doubted, resented this scrying thing that had somehow become part of me. But in this case, I believed in